Welcome everyone to the Friday night public discussion group of Perfecting Horizons Institute. All right, we are on paper 47, right at the beginning, which is old single column, page 530. All right. This is a paper that everyone is always very interested in, since it has a lot, so much immediate relevance to what happens to us when we leave our nativity world here. Where do we go next in our ascension in the universe of universes? It's an oft read paper for that reason. And everyone who knows is familiar with this paper. Before you actually get to them, sequentially stepping through the seven so-called mansion worlds, you've got this initial bit of material about the Finaliter's world and the probationary nursery. Okay? So, I'm sure we're going to have a lot of questions about the probationary nursery when we get to that section. You recall we were leading up to it a few papers back when they gave us a few little hints about the probationary nursery. So we're finally going to get the main content on that now. All right, so let's see. Remember, too, that you've got the seven primary satellites of Gerasim, the Finaliter's world is the first of those seven. And then the seven mansion worlds are the sub-satellites of that primary satellite. So as we're still right there with Gerasim, but on the worlds leading up to it. All right, so let's just jump right in. We'll talk for a moment about the why they use the term mansion worlds for those seven sub-satellites. After we read the first paragraph.
Paper 47, the seven mansion worlds. The Creator Son, when on Urantia, spoke of the many mansions in the Father's universe. In a certain sense, all 56 of the encircling worlds of Gerasim are devoted to the transitional culture of ascending mortals. But the seven satellites of world number one are more specifically known as the mansion worlds.
Okay. Even though we know that all the seven different schemes, including the six besides the ascension scheme, are active, in every place in the universe. You notice what they say here. In a certain sense, all 56 of the encircling worlds of Gerasim are devoted to the transitional culture of ascending mortals. So it is the case that there's an awful lot of focus, no matter what local system you're in, no matter what super universe you're in, you're just getting mortals off of their initial nativity worlds, just inescapably, that those very first worlds that you're on are going to have a lot to do with the ascension scheme. Okay. However, remember when we read about the seven primary satellites, there is a lot of other stuff going on. But nonetheless, it's just sort of inescapable that when you have all of these billions and billions of mortals coming off of the nativity worlds, feeding through these initial worlds, it's going to be a lot about the ascension scheme. Okay, so, you know, I think everyone is familiar with that classic line from the Gospel of John. You know, the traditional translation is, in my Father's house there are many mansions, right? You know, if you have a, you know, some of the newer translations, they might say dwelling place, you know, dwelling places instead of mansions, or even rooms, if they, you know, want to make the analogy even more kind of simplistic, you know, in my Father's house are many rooms or something like that. But the Revelators want to use the word mansion you know, for two reasons. One is just the simple literal meaning of the word mansion. Okay, it literally just means dwelling place. And so that's why sometimes it'll be translated dwelling place, so that it it has just kind of the most straightforward you know, recognition to it, and it doesn't bring in the you know, the that additional idea that we have attached to the word mansion of, well, there must be some gigantic, you know, palatial estate that I, you know, I'm going to. But the fact that it does have that, you know, they it has an inviting, you know, and you know, sort of a context of, you know, you aren't treated like just, you know, one of billions. You're just a cog in a vast ascension scheme, you know, machine. You know, you're treated very definitively as an individual. The Universal Father loves you as if you're the only being in the universe of universes, right? But that absolute love. So the fact that the word mansion has that additional aspect, you know, they're always wanting to give you more than just fact, right? I mean, it's a revelation of truth with some disclosure of fact thrown in order to have enough context in which to reveal truth. But the main reason you want to reveal truth, you know, and to just do that factual statement of dwelling place, right, it misses that greater truth, you know, of how personally and individually you are recognized and cared for. Right, so to, you know, and of course the basic thing of, you know, they're trying to play off of everything that we have evolutionally that they can. You know, they never miss a chance to pull some sentence out of the Bible and maybe tweak it a little bit, you know, so that it can be used as an on ramp into your recognition of the truth. So. You know, they're called the seven mansion worlds, but in the bigger context, they're the first Morontia worlds. They're the first worlds where you're a Morontia being. You have a Morontia body. You know, and as you're ascending up through the local universe, you know, so they're Morontia worlds too. You know, and sometimes, you know, they'll use that more general expression. But, and like they're saying, I mean, it's not like you don't have a dwelling place for, when you're at the constellation level, right? I mean, you could say there's mansions for you on the, you know, on the constellation worlds too, you know, or the local universe headquarters worlds or wherever, right? But in terms of you know, thinking about, you know, the word mansion invokes an image of this life a lot, you know. And it's only those first seven worlds that have some immediacy of relationship to what we understand here. You know, before you start really leaving anything remotely familiar behind. Right. So you can see why they say that, but the seven satellites of world number one are more specifically known as the mansion worlds. Yeah. And it should remind you, I mean, obviously, if you didn't have that passage in the Bible, they would have picked some other designation for those worlds. It's not like in the local universe tongue, you know, they're called mansion worlds and they've translated that into English or something, right? I mean, they're just, you know, if they gave a revelation like this to some other world that didn't have that, you know, historical sentence to play off of, they would have, you know, they would designate them with something else that was more appropriate. So as always, you know, The exact coinage is for our sake, to make it as immediately tangible as possible.
On-ramps.
Yeah, as many on-ramps as possible into the bigger picture. All right, let's see. All right, so, and just, since they mentioned it, 56, remember, you've got, the seven primary satellites, and each of them has seven sub-satellites. Yeah, so that's, you've got 56, and then 57 if you count Gerasim. All right, so we got the geography in place. What's the main, point of these worlds? Like I said, we won't get to that until we get a little bit forward. So they're just going to give you a little bit of a sense of the finaler world and the probationary nursery first. And let's see what else they say here in the preface.
Transition world number one itself is quite exclusively devoted to ascendant activities, being the headquarters of the Finaliter Corps assigned to Satania. This world now serves as the headquarters for more than 100,000 companies of Finaliters, and there are 1,000 glorified beings in each of these groups.
Now, I should probably mention, if you're new to the Urantia book, there's going to be lots of terminology that isn't immediately familiar. Just kind of go with the flow on the unfamiliar things. That comes over time as you begin to try to wrap your mind around all the details in over 2,000 pages. But, you've got the Finaliters coming back from Paradise to serve in the Universe of Universes. And one of the jobs that they do, is in every local system, you've got a core assigned to, as they're saying, it's quite exclusively devoted to ascendant activities. They have a core of Finaliters in each local system to really anchor the initial experiences of mortals coming off of their nativity worlds. That even though you've just gotten started on this very, very long journey, it may take you a billion years, right? But even though you've just got started, you get a foretaste of the feast to come. You get exposed to those that have already made that long adventure across space and time and have come back to be part of, welcoming you into this long task ahead of you, to encourage you on. The more we get into the mansion worlds, the more we'll recognize factually what kind of a challenge is ahead of us. The less we'll be living off of wishful thinking and magical ideas of what it takes to get to be able to stand in the presence of an infinite being and recognize his existence and these sorts of things, to climb all the way up till you have some relationship to the absolute level, of recognition. I mean, it's a huge task. And so you can easily despair. If they just said, you're just going to have to trust and you can't see anything. It's 100, zillion miles away in a countless number of years, and you'll get there someday. I mean, we're just beginning. We're just, we're just trying to get out of our animal origin nature. It's, it's no magical finger snap when you go to the first mansion world and suddenly you're free of your tendencies for material gravity to drag you down and become disillusioned and discouraged. And so you need this. You need something tangible to hold on to, that this is possible, that other mortals like you have done this. Like I said, especially when you start to really recognize factually what it's going to take to get there, just how far down you're starting in the vertical hierarchy, right? You're starting at the very bottom, and you got to climb to the very top. Okay, so yeah, so that's key. And even though, like they'll tell you in a minute, even though we can't immediately see them, remember that those one-time mortals, even though they've climbed very high, right, they don't burn bridges behind them. They still have the ability to relate to the lowest levels where they began. So they can see you, and occasionally you're allowed to, you're given to, some help to be able to visualize them. All right, let's see. Anything else there? Oh, just, remember when we, way back when we were, thinking about how many residences they had on the Isle of Paradise for Vinaliters, and it's a, almost unimaginably gigantic number. Just look at here. You've got 100,000 companies. Remember how there were companies of 1,000 that they tell you back there when you're talking about those residences. So you see that 1,000 companies of 1,000, it's always in place. So you have those companies of 1,000, and you've got 100,000 of those just, when you're getting started. So that's a lot of Vinaliters, a lot of very, very influential beings to come all the way down, kind of at the lowest level and just be there long term for us to help us get going.
And with all these thousands of dwellings for these creatures, they're certainly not going to be stackable apartments.
Yeah, and of course, remember again, the Vinaliters world is, that 10 times the diameter of the Earth, roughly, right? Those primary satellites are 10 times the diameter, so you have 100 times the surface area. So there's there's a lot of room on those primary satellites for dwelling places. All right, let's keep going here.
When a system is settled in light and life, and as the mansion worlds, one by one, cease to serve as mortal training stations, they are taken over by the increasing Vinaliter population, which accumulates in these older and more highly perfected systems.
Right, so just, remember, they're just giving these little snippets of stuff they talk about a lot in other places. Remember how this works as the more the nativity worlds advance. The more advanced the mortals are on those worlds, the less and less they need these seven mansion worlds, which are basically just extensions of life on these worlds, to allow you to get done what you can't get done, to get started in a brief life on an initial sphere. And so one by one, so eventually there will be no planets in a given local system that have anyone that needs to spend any time on the first mansion world. They've achieved everything that you do on the first mansion world on their nativity sphere. They don't keep it open just so that everyone can spend 10 days there, and then go to the next one. Remember how they tell you that, if you're not going to stay there long term, you're just there for 10 days and then you move on to the next one. So they're not going to keep it open just for those 10-day meet and greets. They transition it to other activities, and it ceases to be a mansion world. And one by one, eventually everyone on every world in the local system is skipping over all the mansion worlds. Remember how eventually, you skip over the whole local system and you start at the constellation level, or very advanced, you start all the way up at the local universe headquarters level. But remember how you do come back and teach. But obviously, in those later years of people coming back to teach, there's no one to teach on a first mansion world anymore, for instance, and then no one on the first two. And right, so the whole thing just starts elevating up. And it's a simple way to remember that to fill out supremacy, you you have people starting at very low levels and working all the way up, and people starting at very high levels and just working the last little bit up, and you know, and going at it in every which way. And I mean, in order to complete supremacy, you know, everyone basically has to have a different sort of experience. You know, and one of those basic things is, you know, eventually everyone is starting at a much higher level, in the same sense that none of us started 450 million years ago as a single-celled animal and evolved over 450 million years into this. You know, we've got that whole 450 million years of animal evolution plus 100 million years of plant evolution all wrapped up in our starting point, you know, and we build upon that foundation, you know. So, you know, a million years from now, people on this planet, you know, will be much more advanced, and they won't go through some of the rudimentary things that we go through. That's not their part of the picture, to acquire experiences at those very low levels. Because certain experiences at high levels can only be achieved if you don't start at the lowest level. Plus, certain experiences at the highest level can only be achieved if you do start at the lowest level. You know, so, I mean, everyone has to do a different part of the picture. All right. And you can see, you know, it may start out with 100,000 companies, but the more things evolve in a local system, see, the more and more finaliters you get, because more and more, when things start to get very settled, like when a local universe gets settled in light and life, you know, things are starting to really be going on in that local universe that are oriented towards when the grand universe is settled in light and life. You have, you know, the agents of the Supreme Being are beginning to function in, you know, in the local universe in advance of that, and the finaliters are working with them, and right, things move on to very different sorts of phenomena. Yeah, someone on the webinar?
Yeah, there's a two-part question. Okay. From Joy Brandt. Do you think that we already have 100,000 companies of finaliters, or
yeah, on
or do you read that as a goal? Also, these finaliters are probably from other super universes, right?
Right. It's extremely likely that they're from other super universes, because remember, you, as a finaliter, you serve in the other six super universes before you do any subsequent work in your super universe. So, yeah, it's very likely they're from other super universes. And the way that they juxtapose this, so you can see, it starts out with an initial group of 100,000 companies. That's the initial. And then who knows how many you might have, like they're saying. See, the by the increasing finaliter population, which accumulates in these older, right, so... I have no idea how big it might get as you go forward, over the billions and billions of years, you know. Right, we're still quite young. Remember, it's, I mean, our whole local universe is relatively young. I mean, the last local system headquarters was built only about 5 billion years ago. Right, and, the first inhabited worlds in our local universe were only 200 billion years ago. Right? Now, now that seems like a long time from our perspective, but when you're talking about, you know, hundreds of trillions of years, right, I mean, that's quite recent. You know, we're just getting going. Our local universe is a long, long, long ways away from becoming incorporated into the super universe and, you know, on an equal footing with, you know, the actual super universe level of things. So, who knows how long, you know, that'll take. Let's see. All right, let's read that last one there.
The seven mansion worlds are in the charge of the Maruncha supervisors and the Melchizedeks. There is an acting governor on each world who is directly responsible to the Gerasim rulers. The Uversa conciliators maintain headquarters on each of the mansion worlds, while adjoining is the local rendezvous of the technical advisors. The reversion directors and celestial artisans maintain group headquarters on each of these worlds. The Sparanga function from mansion world number 2 onward, while all seven, in common with the other transitional culture planets, and the headquarters world are abundantly provided with spinaja of standard creation.
Okay, so just remind you again, we just read about the spinaja. And they're everywhere. You got this standard creation, like this thing. Now remember, with the sporanga, they mentioned on the previous paper that you've got some that are specified for our local system, and they're more of what you would call a spirit sort of a creature, right? Being, they are actually a being. So you see that they. They don't start functioning until the second mansion rolls. You know, just a little indication that until the mortals get, through that very, very rudimentary material-related stuff on the first mansion world, there's no reason for the Sporanga to be there. Okay, then the two other things in there. Okay, now that first sentence. So, in the next paper, we'll read about the Marantia supervisors, the Marantia power supervisors. So a little reminder there that when you're working on these worlds where, basically you have Marantia beings as one of the key elements of what's going on there, which is the whole local universe, part of the ascension scheme, right? You're ascending as a Marantia being. Obviously, the Marantia power supervisors, along with the master physical controllers, are very key to just, what you are, right? There's nothing, quote-unquote, natural about Marantia substance. It's an artificial substance, your body is made out of that. You have Marantia mind seated on that. You've got to learn all of the details of that. As we'll see in the next paper, they'll explain just how much physics of Marantia substance, right, you'll have to get into in order to know how to maximize your ability to progress. Right?
Is spirit substance natural?
Yes, when you think of kind of quote unquote natural, in other words, a substance that doesn't have to be maintained by beings directly, like Marantia substance does, matter and spirit substance plus mind energy don't have to be actively maintained like that because there's an absolute anchor for each of those three energies, right? The absolute of matter, the absolute mind, and the absolute spirit. They're because they're anchored by those absolutes, they're maintained on that foundation. But Marantia substance doesn't have an absolute foundation like that. Right? So it's maintained. Now, everything, of course, there's nothing automatic about the material or the spirit energy in the universe of universes. The universe is mind-made, right? Mind-planned, mind-made, and mind-administered, right? Personality-managed. It's not like, just think about this table. That table didn't naturally get into that form, right? Beings formed it into that shape. That's true in general, of course. But no being has to sort of hold on to the automatons of that table and keep it together just as atoms, right? That happens, quote unquote, naturally. But with Marantia substance, it actually has to be maintained by the power beings. They have to have a ubiquitous presence that's active and holding it together. So, in that sense, it's an art form, right? It's artificial. It has to do with their artistry, those beings' artistry in constructing that material that can serve you so well as a transitional body during the local universe career and, and everything else that needs to be Marantia, too, besides your body.
Part of the book that says that mind is always sufficient to construct a body vehicle.
In the sense of your mind doesn't literally pull the raw materials together, but in terms of tweaking the body so that it's what it needs to be for the mind to seat on it properly, the mind is able to do that. The mind over matter ability.
So right? Once I get a Maharaja body, I personally can make it look like Gisele Bündchen if I want.
Well, you know, it will. I mean, right now, I mean, this matter. I mean, there's no law of physics that makes matter collect into a finger-shaped form like that. I mean, right now, mind is engaging this collection of matter and keeping it in this form. The moment that mind disengages, 3 days later, my finger is not quite as tightly, you know, held together as it used to be, right? I mean, once mind disengages, that mind over matter disappears, right? Right. So there's an awful lot, you know, that is only held together because mind is engaged in this. And if mind wasn't able to dominate matter and hold it together like this, mind couldn't seat on it.
Which right? Sort of explains and was it you that said this some time ago, that there's, it's odd that our bodies last as long as they do, because, you know, entropy would say that we ought to really start decomposing right off the bat.
Right. I mean, right. Like, I mean, basically, that's what I was just saying. I mean, you know that if we were just nothing but matter, mm-hmm. right, you wouldn't, you know, last 3 days. And yet we live for decades.
Yeah.
Right. You know, that's not magic. I mean, we're obviously not, you know, that's why, you know, I've tried to point out, you know, back in the 19th century when we discovered the second law of thermodynamics, the law of entropy, everyone knew that was proof that we weren't purely material. Because obviously, you know, I'm not unraveling. Something superior to the mere matter and its laws is you know, overruling that to a degree.
Speak for yourself.
Right? But, you know, the key for that mind to be able to take a hold of that matter, you know, why doesn't mind keep mountains from eroding down? Right? That's because, you know, you don't have life animation engaged to that mountain like life animation is engaged to my body, you know, the matter in my body. And that life animation, so that it's living matter, allows mind to engage it, you know, and hold it together. You know, and it's, you know, it starts out with that mechanical mind. The mechanical mind is the, you know, basic mind that's, you know, making sure that my heart is beating regularly, keeping my body temperature regulated and stuff like that. You know, when someone is very, very near death, you know, and the adjutants have all disengaged, you know, and the last thing that's still holding on is the mechanical mind, you know, you can tell when the mechanical mind is starting to separate, because their body temperature starts fluctuating and all these things, you know, and that's, you know, it's just about to disengage. Right? It's just a little reminder of how much we take for granted that mind dominates matter, right? You couldn't have a constant body temperature or anything like that if, you know, if it weren't for mind keeping things together. Yeah, and, you know, that life animation, like you were just alluding to, you know, saying speak for yourself, you know, as we age, and we all go, well, I don't know about that entropy thing. I think it's starting to have an effect here. right, that's because that association of life animation to the matter degrades with time. You know, it's not that the mind still couldn't dominate, but the interface is starting to degrade. You know, it's temporally qualified, that life animation associated with that matter. And as that starts to disassociate, there's no way for mind to hold the stuff together anymore. So your fundamental aging process is because of that life animation losing its identification to the matter. That's why we age. And you know, material sons and daughters on Gerasim don't age, even though they're basically just like us, because that life animation is kept because of sort of a greater influence, is kept tightly associated with the matter, unlike with us. Yeah, so we age. Okay. Oh, and then, all right, so besides the Maharaja power supervisors, all the physics of you having a Maharaja body and all that, you know, and then, of course, the main thing that your education. You know, and so that's why you got the Maharaja supervisors and the Melchizedeks are in charge. So you've got the whole Melchizedek University is down at the local system level as a beginning preparatory school down at the local system level. So you're the basic physics and instruction. So those are the leaders. I mean, those are the two main elements of what's going on. So it's just very logical that those are the two types of beings that are in charge. Okay, now the other thing in there, notice there is an acting governor on each world. Yeah. Remember, we were commenting on that at the end of the previous paper when we were talking about the rectangles and the triangle, structures, those emplacements, that there's a whole bunch of stuff about just the basic governance of these worlds and a lot of the beings that are in these worlds that aren't revealed to us. That's just a little reminder. I mean, these worlds don't somehow self-govern, and they're not governed from afar by the system sovereign on Gerasim. System sovereign is really not worried with local governance. I mean, he's the big picture of everything in the whole local system, of course. But where the rubber meets the road and the basic details of who's going to fix the pothole in the road, right? The system sovereign is not worrying about such things, right? You've got a local governance, and every one of these, all 57 of these worlds have a whole, these seven mansion worlds are each the size of our planet, basically. And there's no oceans and deserts and, frozen wasteland and stuff like that. The whole sphere is habitable. That's a lot of space with a lot of beings that need to be coordinated. Right, so don't ever forget that there's, even though they just mention in passing, that's a huge thing there that's just not immediately talked about. Okay, now the thing. I told you that as we finished the last paper, the archangel was ending on that heavy note, and that was a transition. Remember how he ended? He seemed to be not as prickly as you'd expect an archangel to be, throughout the whole paper, until you got to the last paragraph, and instead of ending with kind of an upbeat note like they often do with a paper, he hits you with a sledgehammer and quoted, the wages of sin is death. Eternal obliteration. And you're going, whoa, what a way to end a paper. I told you that was foreshadowing. Okay, remember, even though, especially now post-Pentecost, your salvation is a given. Right? Everyone gets an adjuster by grace. Everyone has a copy of their higher nature saved, salvation. As a soul, Chester built makes a copy as a soul. You're going to, wake up on the first mansion world, right? So salvation is not an issue. Just take salvation for granted. But survival is another question, right? You're still mortal on the mansion worlds. You haven't fused with your thought adjuster yet. So survival is still in play. Right? You still need to definitively choose to be grown through that process of the seven psychic circles, right? The seven moving up those seven cosmic levels to the point of fusion. Then and only then are you factually connected to eternity. Even though they're not going to focus on it, as we read, mostly a very positive mode about moving through the mansion worlds, remember that's in play, right? The reason that you have the Melchizedeks in charge, why is it you want to have all this educational assistance about how to consecrate your mind to the universal harmony of God the Mother, why are you going through all that effort? Because you and you alone, have to face the binary fact of reality. You're either connected to eternity or you're not eventually. You have all the grace that you need to get to the point where you can make that definitive choice.
But
you have to choose. It's right there in front of you the whole time. You know why you're doing this. You're not doing this just because, well, I thought it'd be fun to be more educated, right, or something. No, you're trying to get yourself to have to be real enough, to be conformal with the cosmos enough that you can actually be part of the whole vast cosmic system. You can be a cosmic citizen in, you know, in fact as well as in truth. Right? And so they just remind you up front here, little thing in passing, the universal conciliators maintain headquarters on each of the mansion worlds, while adjoining is the local rendezvous of the technical advisors. Okay, remember who the technical advisors are? Those are the living law libraries, right? They're the living embodiment of applied law, right? Justice, applied law. They're the living embodiment of applied law, right there with those who apply it, right? The universal conciliators, including the executioners of the Ancients of Days. Right? So even though in general we're going to be positive, don't lose sight of the fact that you need to do what Jesus told you to do. You need to fear not. You need to face facts and you need to take a hold of this. Because, you know, magic doesn't get you to the Isle of Paradise. Reality does. You have to be real. You have to be grown more and more and more real. And if you don't choose that, eventually you will not exist.
You will not be real.
All right? You know, we're on mansion worlds here, where you have a Marantia body, okay? Marantia bodies don't age and die like these. If I go to the point of iniquity, you know, evacuate my soul of all meaning and value, so that I'm just this entity now, personality is disengaged. That energy system doesn't shut itself down. It has to be taken apart down to the last letter, you know, obliterate, right? Like he said at the end there, the previous paper, right? You're unraveled by the executioners. You know, that no longer personal entity that has chosen to cease to be real, right? You have to deal with the energy fact, and that's unraveled. So, you know, it's always there on every world, you know, out of the corner of your eye. It's like, oh yeah, there's the executioner, the Ancients of Days, standing next to the living, you know, law libraries, you know. I need to remember that even though I am immersed in the absolute love of the Father, there's no difference at the absolute level between love and law. Absolute love is also absolute law. Right? And they're just there, see, little reminder. Right? If you're going to get to the absolute love of the Father, if you're going to actually get to the Isle of Paradise someday, stand literally in the presence of that absolute love, the personal presence of that absolute love, you're also standing in the presence of absolute law. Okay? You're going to be transcendent of all grace at that point. Right? No grace is buffering between you and absolute law. You can stand in the presence of absolute law and not be judged by it, not be unraveled by it. Right? You have the integrity that can withstand that love law. Okay? So that's, you know, just see, that's the little thing, right?
It's kind of a grim picture, because the fact that there's a governor, it's like, what? Won't we be organizing ourselves? Won't we be self-governing?
No.
And I mean, that's, it's kind of a, it's like we have something that we should treasure here.
Right.
That we have, that we are self-governing. Because when we get there,
we won't have that. In a way, it's like it's all going to be about me, you know. And that's scary, you know.
Now, of course, remember,
it's
you
not,
know,
and because it's not all about me. It's a maddening thought.
Even though in the United States we are, it's a grand experiment. We are attempting to be more self-governing than any humans have ever been, and we're, you know, failing right now in that. That's why this book is in my lap, you know, because of the emergency situation that's growing on this planet. But of course, remember, no matter how much we were still saying consecrated to what we attempt, you know, challenged ourselves to when we founded this country, we only appear to be self-governing. The Most High's rule in the kingdoms of men, right? Right. We're not self-governing. You know, the only beings that are self-governing, you know, fully are in Havona, right? In the central universe, right? And then a few beings, you know, that are quasi-self-governing, you know, throughout. But in terms of beings kind of the native sorts of like us, right? I mean, you have to get all the way to the central universe before you don't have government.
You know, right.
There's always government.
That seems so shocking with the wondrous things that we've done with our government.
Right. You know, there's this stuff doesn't, you know, we are not divine. We don't hold ourselves together, either individually or collectively. You know, we need help with that. Right, so you know, so there are Melchizedeks to help you with your holding yourself together individually, and there are governors to help hold us together collectively, and right, you have all this external to help you. But right, it's you know, you've got, you know, that's the whole point of you know, just putting that up front so that it. Before you get into all of the details of the mansion worlds, you just remember it's all predicated on, oh yeah, there's that guy, you know. You don't literally have the Grim Reaper, you know, with the, you know, the black garment and everything. In fact, but in truth, you do, right? The Executioner of the Ancients of Days, the capital J Judges, is effectively that, right?
So it sounds, how worried should I be that I'm going to slip up, you know, a few times or be a little slow on the mark, you know, passing tests or whatever? I mean, how worried shall I be?
You shouldn't be worried at all.
Okay.
Step one is fear not. Right? You absolutely will not fail. Unless you absolutely don't want to succeed. Not finitely don't want to succeed. Not supremely don't want to succeed. You know, not absinitely don't want to succeed. Not ultimately don't want to succeed. Not co-absolutely don't want to succeed. No, you have to absolutely not want to succeed.
Yeah.
Right? You have to use the absolute dimension of your personality to absolutely reject reality in order to not succeed. There's nothing to fear.
And your wishes will be granted.
Right? It's totally your choice. Right? But just know that it is, you know, that's the Father has given you free will choice over your relationship to eternity. You don't get to choose, you know, what galaxies are in the second outer space level or anything like that. That's not part of your free will venue. But you and you alone, He can't do anything to change it. He's delegated that of, you know, what absoluteness He once had, He no longer has. He gave to you in that regard about your relationship to eternity. Right? And so, you know, unless you're thinking of absolutely choosing oblivion, you have nothing to fear.
Something that always kind of irked me about my Roman Catholic background was what heaven was being laid out before me by Sister Mary Agnes, familiar. Never made any sense. Moonbeams and lollipops, laying around on clouds with wings. I'd be on drugs in 2 days. Number one. Number two, the thought of being involved and a regime that's going to be teaching, it's going to be nurturing, going to be guiding, going to be showing us, we're going to be visually seeing our advancement and experiencing it. That, to me, sounds much more exciting than laying around, you know, on clouds with these short wings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And before we get into the next section, just, you know, another reminder, you know, when they quote the wages of sin is death, okay, you know, that's from the book of Romans, remember, you know, Apostle Paul saying that, okay. Did Paul know the definition of the word sin? No. I mean, Paul thought that sin was transgression of taboo. Right? You know, when the Revelers quote that, they aren't validating that you know, that primitive notion of what the word sin means, right? You know, transgression, the wages of transgression of taboo is not death, eternal obliteration, no, right? I mean, what's the actual definition of the word sin? Deliberate disloyalty to deity, okay? And notice it says deity, not God, okay? So it's you know, it's more than deliberate disloyalty to God. It's, you know, it's that which is more fundamental than God, deity, right? You know, it's a full-on philosophic choice, not some mere religious choice we're talking about here. I mean, you have to be a personal living philosophy, not a little religious impulse, in order to be deliberately disloyal to deity, right? Anyone can have some simple-minded notion of God and think you're being disloyal to it or something. It's like, well, that's not real, okay? You know, so, you know, this is nothing. There's nothing to fear. I mean, you can't even get to that level of, you know, recognition of the reality of the cosmos to reject it yet. You can reject all sorts of silly primitive things, but that doesn't do you any harm. You know, eventually you're going to reject all silly notions of God, you know, that a lot of people right now would think would be, you know, damning to reject that. You know, you're going to transcend silly notions of God. To go to iniquity, you have to reject the real God, and more so, you have to reject the very foundation upon which God rests, right, as an individual. You have to reject reality. So, you know, it's nothing that you can flippantly, ignorantly do. There's nothing to fear. But do know, there will be a day when you will have that kind of recognition. You will see the cosmos definitively enough that you can reject it or accept it. And you will choose one way or the other. You know, that's been given to you and you alone, to see it clearly and to choose.
Even now we can recognize the logic of it, because if I were to choose to become unreal, mm-hmm. If I choose unreality, you know that all reality will be upheld. But no, not even God can uphold unreality. There's no upholder for unreality.
Because it doesn't exist. No one can hold nothing.
That's right.
Right. If you make yourself nothing, don't be surprised if you're not being held anymore. There's nothing to hold, right? Again, you know, you have to get out of the Zoroastrian dual spiritism mode, you know, where you think of good and bad as two different types of stuff, you know, and one's white and one's black. No, there's stuff or no stuff, right? There's goodness and ungoodness, you know. Badness is not a separate stuff. It's the lack of goodness, you know. It's the absence of stuff, yeah?
Why would anybody choose nothing to not...
It depends on how much you fall in love with yourself.
Really, is that the threat?
Right. I mean, you're given the ability to love absolutely, but it's not pre-directioned. You can choose the direction. Do you use that absolute love to love God and others? Or do you turn all the arrows inward?
But if you got to that point where you actually saw and knew...
Yeah.
I can't imagine turning.
It's when we get to the, you know, papers about the Lucifer Rebellion, you know, remember the reason they give you that is to, so that, You know, we can think about some of that, the pathology of that a little bit. You know, how it is that someone gets to that point. It happens gradually and unwittingly at first. And eventually you lack the courage to turn the course that you see as a false course, and eventually you become cosmically insane and can't make a correct decision anymore. Once you become cosmically insane and having flipped around in your mind, if I hold up white in front of you, you see black. And if I hold up black in front of you, you see white. Well, now you're hosed. All right. I mean, you can't pick good anymore because bad looks good to you and good looks bad. You've reversed it in your mind. I mean, who can help you now? Right? So once you get to that level of sin, you know, where you've flipped things around 180 degrees, you know, you're just on an inexorable path to evacuating all value and meaning from yourself.
Oblivion, right? Is your paradise.
But you don't just stumble into that one day. That, you know, it's a long process to get to the point where you know, flip things around like that.
You have to work at it.
Yeah, you got to really work at it.
The image of all-knowing creators projecting out into the vast plane of creation the potential for all of these beings to exist. And then the wonderful idea of being shepherded, as Jesus talked about. You know, the point is to create citizens, to inhabit the universe with citizens who are on board with the plan. Mm-hmm. And we are being shepherded, we're cast out like seeds on a field and being shepherded back in to the fold. And those who want to run off into the hills and live their happy little solitary lives will find out that that doesn't work. And I think we forget what we are. We forget what we are. We think we are struggling so hard to reach this deity that is so separate from ourselves and crawling on our knees, oh, please take me in. But in fact, we are its creation, and it's just drawing us back.
Right. And of course, you know, yeah, I mean, all that, and you know, and of course, just remember, one of the great things of the fifth epical revelation is, you know, you don't just have the God of transcendence, you don't just have the God on the outside, God the Father, you know, the transcendent of space and time. You have God the Mother, the God of immanence, the God that remains within. Is intimate with you, is the way. You know, you don't have to somehow journey all alone across a vast, infinite space that you know none of the rules of or anything, right? You have an upholder right here with you, right? You have the God of immanence and the God that remained within so that there was something for you to stand on, right? The way to his will.
And the shepherd saying, stay
right here. And countless beings to help you,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Every step of the way.
That's,
I mean, to fail is such an extreme task.
Really?
I mean, you have to reject an almost infinite number of things to get there. Right? There's nothing to fear. Right? But don't forget that you have absolute free will, you know, in relation to your connection to eternity. If you want to absolutely reject everything, you can. But it's not trivial. It's an absolute task. It's not a finite task. It's an absolute task. So you're not going to stumble into it. Right?
Obviously, it's not going to be an oops.
Yeah, there's no oops to it, right? Not at all.
It's happened enough times to populate the universe with supreme adjusters.
Not to mention, unlike a seraphim, say, you have a fragment of the deity of the Father that resides within your mind. You can't be given any more help. You have a fragment of infinity and eternity that dwells within you. what could you possibly lack? Right. How could you possibly fail unless you absolutely overrule that infinite gift? Right?
Those that choose iniquity, Chris just said that I forget what happens, that it takes that to become a thought adjuster, or...
Oh, he was just mentioning, you know, that those who do choose iniquity, as they go to zero relative to supremacy, to the total finite, the adjuster that lives within is a reciprocal phenomenon, and they go to the fullness of supremacy in a positive sense in relationship to that. That adjuster acquires an experiential nature that makes him a supreme adjuster. And even though that individual rejected eternity, that adjuster has all of that incredible experience now that they can help the next individual, that adjuster indwells. Some of us in the room undoubtedly have supreme adjusters. So again, they can help you even more. Right, because they know all the more about how to get around your ignorance and help to catalyze your growth. So
why do you say some of us undoubtedly have?
Because everyone on this planet has advanced or supreme adjusters, and just statistically, I'm thinking right. I mean, it's probably pretty likely that, some of us have supreme adjusters. None of us may be really using them that much yet, and we need to challenge ourselves to be a phenomenon that doesn't require an adjuster twiddling its thumbs, right? Well, someday he's going to do something that I might be able to work with, right? If all you're fixated in, is on, material issues, don't expect the adjuster to be doing anything for you, right? Let alone the Holy Spirit or the Spirit of Truth doing anything for you, right? Let's get back to the finality world here. Oh, is there something?
Yep. Yeah, Winston understands how difficult it is to evaporate your soul.
Yeah.
But he's wondering about influences from the outside, advertising of evil, power of suggestion, and so on. He's wondering, can you become cosmically psychotic by the advertising of evil?
No, see, again, the only thing that can damage your soul is that which you will. So you can be immersed in a very negative environment, but unless you choose to identify with that, and remember, we're not talking about decisions, we're talking about choices, talking about actually using your personality, not just using your self-assertion, or material gravity's tendency for you to gravitate mindily to selfish things in the environment. Right, none of that has any consequence. Right, it's about whether or not you actually function as a personality. And it's sad to record that most people aren't, right, to any degree. So again, that's another thing. It's hard for us to manifest much personality in this initial life. So it's doubly hard, to really do any damage to your soul. You've got that initial embryonic soul that's well formed by grace. Most likely, you're never going to rise to very much in the way of actual personality function. You're not going to do any damage to that soul.
Here.
But when you get to the mansion worlds, right, you have a much more intimate relationship to this phenomenon. You're much more personal there, naturally, right? Which means you can much more easily positively impact your soul. But every measure of creativity has an equal measure of destructivity attached to it. That means you can also just as equally, if you choose, do damage to the quality of your soul. But again, it's not, it has to be genuine, objective choice. Nothing ignorant, about it, or just, I can't help but be born in this world where I'm immersed in this bad stuff, there may be some evil in your mind because of that, but not sin. Right? It may be some disloyalty to the unity of deity. You may have some disruption of the unity in your mind, but it's not deliberate. right? So it's not sin, right? And evil doesn't impact your soul, but sin does. Yep.
Well, what about challenging norms and customs that we call good? Because you cannot really be good as long as you're following what other people say are good, until the good has become your own reality.
Yeah, see, and that's another issue. See, and we could go on and on and on for this for hours. You know, I mean, remember, all these words have to be redefined. You know, what does the word moral mean? You know, humans think that the word, you know, to be moral is to be in conformity with the mores. It's like, you know, so if you read the word moral in here, just like if you read the word sin in here, and you use the human definition of the word moral, no, you're going to completely misunderstand what they're talking about. Now, to be moral is to conform to the cosmos. There's a universal harmony. And we're talking about, you know, real conformity to the cosmos or not. The mores systems, you know, or even the taboos in that mores system, you know, have no consequence, right? You're not judged upon how integrous you are with whatever random mores system humans happen to have in this generation. You know, and we all know these things can change radically. You can, you know, from a few decades go by and the current mores system is 180 degrees different than it was, right? Such, you know, fickle sorts of things don't impact your conformity to the cosmos and to eternity. Right? So, yeah, so again, to, you know, you have a moral duty, you have a duty to the cosmos. It's like, well, what's the cosmos? Yeah, that's a good question. If you don't even know what the cosmos is, you're probably not, you know, too far astray from it yet, right? Right? You don't have to be afraid here. But when you get to the mansion worlds, you start to be able to actually have a consciousness that can see the cosmos, you know, can understand that universal harmony, and you can identify with it or reject it. Right? Okay, let's read the Finaliter's word here.
Section 1, the Finaliter's world. Although only Finaliters and certain groups of salvaged children and their caretakers are resident on transitional world number 1, provision is made for the entertainment of all classes of spirit beings, transition mortals, and student visitors. The Sparnaja, who function on all of these worlds, are hospitable hosts to all beings whom they can recognize. They have a vague feeling concerning the Finaliters, but cannot visualize them. They must regard them much as you do the angels in your present physical state.
Okay, just, you know, they throw in that bit about the Sparnaja having you know, a vague feeling. See, that's just a little reminder that as transcendent in some ways as the Finaliter is, it still relates all the way down to that lowly material level in terms of its internal nature, you know. So that there's a fragrance, if you will, to the environment on that world that even non-personal creatures like Sparnaja, you know, those really, really fancy animals that are Sparnaja, even they feel that the quality of the environment down at that, you know, those lower material levels, right? So, that's why they're throwing that in, just to remind you that the Finaliters are quite grounded still, even though when we first get there, we won't be able to see them.
Do they feel it because they're part of it?
Well, just, you know, they're telling you that the Finaliters, in ways we can't understand, are impacting sort of just the environment. Even the low physical environment of that world, the physical energy of that world feels different because they're there. And, you know, if you're immersed in it, you'd take it for granted. But if the Finaliters left that world, the Sparnaja would feel that something had been taken away. There would be a quality, a subtle sort of unconscious quality that would disappear, a wholeness of physical things on that world that wouldn't be there anymore.
What work do they do on that world?
They do all of the physical stuff, because again, it's a physical world.
No,
the Finaliters. Oh, the Finaliters, well, we don't really know what all they do. I mean, most of what the finalities are up to is way beyond our recognition right now. They're working on coordinating things so that eventually stuff can get settled in light and life. They're doing very transcendent activities. But they're also there just for us to kind of add this, like I said, this foretaste of the feast to come. You know, they can do their activities and preparing. You know, remember, there's finalers on this planet too, doing the same sorts of things. You've got finalers on this world who are working on making sure that a trillion years from now, this world will fit in to a universe settled in light and life. You know, so think of the subtle tweaks that they're doing. It's like, well, if we change this by 0.00000001 degrees, a trillion years from now, it'll be where we want it. Right? I mean, they're doing very subtle things, preparing for the distant future, because they have that big picture. Yeah. Yeah, and they have a great relationship to the mother, remember, to the whole. So they see the big picture in ways we can't even imagine, and they can tweak things relative to that big picture. Okay, let's see, what else do we have there? As this mentioned up front here, so, you know, they mentioned the salvaged children, that's the probationary nursery they're going to get to. So again, remember what they told us before, you've got a world that's a surface area of 100 times our planet, and half of that is a probationary nursery. Right? So the equivalent of 50 Earth surfaces just for the probationary nursery. So how many salvaged children are there? More than a couple. Right? That's a big amount of real estate. You know, with no wasted spaces, right? I mean, that for that much space, it just reminds you how many salvaged children there are. Okay, let's keep going here.
Though the Finaliter world is a sphere of exquisite physical beauty and extraordinary Morantia embellishment, the great spirit abode located at the center of activities, the Temple of the Finaliters, is not visible to the unaided material or early Morantia vision. But the energy transformers are able to visualize many of these realities to ascending mortals. And from time to time, they do thus function, as on the occasion of the class assemblies of the Mansion World students on this cultural sphere.
So again, just, you know, remember the energy transformers, that's one of the types of master physical controllers. The best example we kind of have is sort of the holodeck-like notion, you know, or whatnot. They take something that's not normally visible and they give it some sort of a physical skin, if you will, a physical covering or projection that you can relate to at that level, you know, because you don't yet have the ability to visualize the substance directly, right? So in the same way that the master physical controllers, you know, post Jesus' resurrection when he had a Morantia body, I mean, no one could see that Morantia body, but they could make him visible like that.
Would you call that form?
Right. I mean, they give him a visible form, right? I mean, you know, so yeah, you have the form of the body, which, the like in the case of Jesus here, you know, his Morantia energy is conforming to that form. They just add some additional energy that conforms to that form, and you can see that energy.
The visibility, quote, cloak, as opposed to an invisibility.
Right, right. They're cloaking them in visibility, yes. Mm-hmm. Rather than cloaking them in invisibility, yes. Yeah. So just very literal, remember, you know, and all the physics we were talking about with the Morantia power supervisors. I mean, all that physics is in play. Yep. All right. Let's see, anything else there? No, I guess that's, yeah. Okay, but yeah, but just mention, you know, the exquisite physical beauty and extraordinary Morantia embellishment. I mean, you've got to have all those Spernagia there to keep up that vast 100 times the surface area of the earth, and every square inch, you know, is magnificently managed, and every blade of grass, every plant, everything is all perfect, you know, because there's just legions of those Spornagia, you know, gardening, managing everything. Okay.
All through the mansion world experience, you're in a way spiritually aware of the presence of your glorified brethren of paradise attainment. But it is very refreshing now and then actually to perceive them as they function in their headquarters abodes. You will not spontaneously visualize finaliters until you acquire true spirit vision.
Okay, so that, you're going, when do I get true spirit vision? Is that not until I'm a first stage spirit and I leave the local universe? No. Remember what they said here before. Not visible to the unaided material or early Morantia vision. Right? So, you know that once you get down the mansion worlds a little ways, you finally, develop moda consciousness. And anyway, see, once you have sort of a fully developed Morantia consciousness, Morantia substance is, spirit fibers and physical energy fibers woven together, right? You've got that spirit energy nature in your Morantia nature, and once you sort of fully get synchronized with it, you'll have a quote-unquote true spirit vision where you'll be able to visualize, something that's much more what we call spirit substance than physical substance. Okay, so
it wouldn't necessarily be predicated on fusion or...
No, it wouldn't be predicated on fusion or anything like that. Just once you get really kind of going, you might be up to it on the second mansion world, for instance.
Yeah.
You may not fuse until the fifth mansion world.
Yeah.
Right. So.
That'll be an experience when you first start seeing spirit in.
Right. When you start to be able to actually kick a spirit substance wall and feel something, right? When you start to actually get it, when it becomes as literal to you as material substance is right now.
Before they had to help me feel it.
But one day you will trip over a spirit rock or stub your toe on it. Yeah, right. I mean, one day you'll be able to actually, relate to it. Because, it's not just spirit vision, but all of your... You're directly interacting is what it means with spirit, more spirit energy sort of stuff. Okay.
On the first mansion world, all survivors must pass the requirements of the parental commission from their native planets. The present Urantia commission consists of 12 parental couples recently arrived who have had mortal experience in rearing three or more children to the pubescent age. Service on this commission is rotational and is for only 10 years as a rule. All who fail to satisfy these commissioners as to their parental experiences must further qualify by service in the homes of the material sons on Gerasim or in part in the probationary nursery on the Finaliter's world.
Okay, so just the basic thing there, everyone kind of knows, who's read the book, knows about this passage. Right, so to get on that commission, you have to have reared three or more. It's like, well, why three or more? In other words, you had, if you have a single, two is a relationship, three makes it a system. So they have to have experience with children at the system level, not just merely the relationship level. So that there's the super additive consequence of the system of three or more, and you're really managing their relationship to the whole rather than as an individual or as a pair. Now, we've often talked about, a lot of people misinterpret this and think, so I need to have three or more children here in order to... No, I mean, look at it. It's just to get on that commission. Plus, I mean, who's this... just because they get on the commission with three or more doesn't mean they still aren't inadequate in their parental experience. They may still need more parental experience themselves. Right? So, they're going to be assessing themselves, too. But it's just... you know, there's this measure of self-governance, you see, you know, there. There's a measure of wisdom involved in that self-governance. Just take anyone, someone who's got some real cosmic-like, system-like experience with children. They learn the rules, they learn how this is measured. You know, okay, so you need 1.38 units yet of parental experience, right? I mean, this is all very precise and scientific when you're there. And remember how you can get up to half of what you need from working with children in the probationary nursery. But at least half you're going to get with the material sons and daughters, helping them raise their children, like we read before. And also remember, you know, when they say 10 years, you know, the system year is, you know, not that different from our year. So, you know, that's basically 10 years like you think of it. So just a short period of time. Okay. But, you notice the 12 is there again, you know, that 12-fold pattern, which we don't understand all the physics of, but is nonetheless there. You've got a 12-fold assessment. You know, each of these pairs is assessing one fold of the 12-fold assessment that you're under. So, see, it's a very complicated thing that we don't understand the physics of it all. But nonetheless, you know, like we talked about before, no one's going to get out of, you know, beyond Gerasim without directly parental experience and directly experience coming into relationship male to female differential. You know, that the other experiences you can make up for indirectly, but those two only, you know, can be gotten directly. And it's back.
Yep. You triggered a thought that's never come up before relative to this three kids.
Mm-hmm.
Is the suggestion that it's most ideal to be raised as a child, not talking about the parental experience of wrangling three or more kids, but as a kid, is it most beneficial to be in a grouping of three or more kids?
Yeah, I mean, humans all know how problematic a single child's development can be, right? You know, there's issues.
I beg to differ. Well, I'm an only child.
I know, but we'll see when we get to the probationary nursery.
There's no issues.
Well, listen, let me make this point. Yeah. I have so many friends whose lives are very altered and somewhat traumatized by experiences they have had with bullying siblings.
Sure, right. It works. Obviously, it works both ways. Yeah. But remember, you know, forget about the negative, trivial things in this life, right? I mean, we're talking about true cosmic things, and there's no substitute for socialization. One person can't socialize. Having friends is more than one, right? Just the simple fact, if it takes at least two, you know, to have a relationship, and three or more to have a genuine socialization, so a social context, to have that super additive relating to the cosmos phenomenon going on, to synchronize with the universal harmony. So, but again, if there weren't people that were only children on their nativity sphere, the Supreme could never be completed. Right? I mean, it takes everything. Right? Some aspects of the Supreme only come into existence because you were an only child. Right? I mean, there's nothing wrong with you being only a child. It's just that, you know, I mean...
My sister died.
Right. Right, I know, but still, you know, we know that all of us eventually get to the constellation level and we spend, you know, ages there socializing, right? It's a key element. Right?
I'm just thinking about all the people that I know who truly, even going into old age, are still traumatized
right.
by bullying that they got from civilization.
Yeah, and if they weren't traumatized, they could never grow into this cosmic citizen that they will be one day and contribute to the Supreme like they're going to contribute. I mean, the Supreme takes all facts towards positive ends, right? You know, and we need to think, direct your thoughts to the future, not to the present and the past. You know, things don't have value because of what they are or what they were. They have value because of what they will be, what they're becoming, right? And that person has a huge opportunity to potentialize or to actualize the potentials that are only present when they had bullying siblings. And how sad it is that you would reject the possibility that there's potential there, positive potential, and not try to actualize it.
Right? Bullying is the fifth adjutant,
the tension in that, right?
It's negative, yes, but it's.
It's potentially positive. It might be immediately negative, but everything is potentially positive. Your personality can take everything. You know, the extent to which you don't make a positive out of an initially negative experience is the extent to which you haven't used your personality. First, that's the power of personality. You can take any set of facts and direct them towards a positive end. That's the gift the Father gave you. Mind is transcendent of matter, so mind can do something about difficult material facts. It's dominant over matter. Spirit is dominant over mind. So spirit can do things over difficult mindal facts. Well, personality directs spirit. So personality can do something about difficult spirit facts. Right? Your personality can take any situation towards positive if you choose. It's up to you. If you don't want to choose,
it's not that you're fostering.
Right? But just know that you have the power of choice. You're not just a blob of molecules. You're not just a blob of protoplasm, you know. The materialistic age teaches us that we have no free will, that we're just a blob of matter. No, you have a personality. You can choose to be happy in the midst of difficulty. That's a power you have. Right?
This speaks to why do bad things happen to good people?
Because it's an opportunity to choose to do something positive with something that's, you know, initially negative. A Havona native doesn't get that option. There's never any negative environment in the central universe. They never get that opportunity to choose. Okay? And I can immerse myself in a bath of positive spirit phenomena, and I can feel joy. But I have something greater than joy that I can experience. I can experience happiness if I choose. And in the midst of even great negativity, a unity environment that's completely disrupted, I can choose to not be defined by that environment. I have that power. And if I do that, I will experience something greater than joy, something that's genuine happiness. All right. All right, so the whole bit with children, and just, you know, don't think that just because you had three, you may still be inadequate. Who knows what the physics of this is? And by pubescent age, okay, don't think so biologically. Remember, we're talking fundamentally about leaving the material behind and getting into this morontial domain, which is like mind energy made substance. This fundamental associative domain. So in that mindal sense, to be adult-like, you know, the literal meaning of puberty, pubescent, is raising children to roughly age 16 when they become a separate mind energy phenomenon. And we're about to read about that with the probationary nursery. If you're under 16, roughly, you're still literally attached mindally to your biologic parents. So that's what they're talking about, raising children to the point where they're actually a separate mindal self. Okay.
But irrespective of parental experience, Mansion World parents who have growing children in the probation nursery are given every opportunity to collaborate with the Marantia custodians of such children regarding their instruction and training. These parents are permitted to journey there for visits as often as 4 times a year, and it is one of the most touchingly beautiful scenes of all the ascending career to observe the Mansion World parents embrace their material offspring on the occasions of their periodic pilgrimages to the Finality World. While one or both parents may leave a Mansion World ahead of the child, they are often, quite often, contemporary for a season.
Okay, so just, you know, that's fairly basic. You know, notice again, though, you know, that whole bit of the mystery of Marantia energy obviously can take, grab a hold of material energy. I mean, you know, that child in the probationary nursery has a material body. You know, you on the first Mansion World, say, have a Marantia body, but you can embrace that child. So, you know, remember we talked about this whole, we don't understand all the physics of how Marantia energy and physical energy interact, but they obviously do. You're not just pretending to hug this child, you know, and the child can see you, right, and everything. So, let's see, what else do we have there? The bit about the Marantia custodians of such children. You know, they mentioned that back before. Remember this is paper, 45, yeah, paper 45, section 6 is where we talked about some of these things before. They talked about how the probationary nursery is maintained by certain Marantia personalities. They don't reveal exactly, you know, who these individuals are that are kind of running the show there. We don't know. But that's who they're referring to there with the Marantia custodians. About 4 times a year here. What else do we have there? As we'll read in a minute here, you know, children are not in the probationary nursery very, very long. So, you know, it's obviously quite likely that you won't have made it off the first Mansion World, for instance, yet. Who knows, you know, how long we're all going to be on the first Mansion World. So, you know, the kids, you know, can obviously catch up and be on the first Mansion World with you once they are done in the probationary nursery. Okay, read that next one.
No ascending mortal can escape the experience of rearing children, their own or others. Either on the material worlds or subsequently on the Finality World or on Gerasim, fathers must pass through this essential experience just as certainly as mothers. It is an unfortunate and mistaken notion of modern peoples on Urantia that child culture is largely the task of mothers. Children need fathers as well as mothers, and fathers need this parental experience as much as do mothers.
All right, so again, just how essential this is. And and we obviously don't understand all the physics of that, but they're reminding you that this is literal and it's definitive. You know, it is an unfortunate and mistaken. Remember, they don't use the word mistaken lightly, right? The mis prefix means wrong, wrongly taken. Okay? You're causing actual disruption of the unity of the situation. You know, it's evil, not sinful, right? But you're disrupting the unity. So they're trying to remind you that there's a whole system here, and if you're going to have the unity of the threefold actuality, if you're going to have the unity in the system, certain key things have to be in play. So, you know, remember we talked about how even the non-sexed creatures that need parental experience on Gerasim, you know, help raise the children of the material sons and daughters. But, you have to keep in mind the physics, that there needs to be definitive, the father, mother of the material son and daughter in play too, right? You know, so, you know, we can think about, you know, how to apply that. You know, and humans are, they're starting to actually believe that there's a difference between men and women again. You know, we're getting over our delusion some. You know, and we're starting to recognize that there's a physics here that needs to be acknowledged and put in play. So there has to be, you know, if you're going to have a same-sex couple raise a child, you know, there has to be a social environment too. I mean, there has to be both men and women. You can't just put it on an island somewhere and expect it to have all of the influences that it needs. Right? So, and the extent to which a different sex couple are raising a child and they're not being fundamentally father, mother, you know, and their influence, that child is going to need, you know, to get the father or the mother influence from somewhere, right? So they're just reminding you that it's not just wishful thinking or something. There's a literal physics here. Okay. All right, let's get into the probationary nursery.
Two, the probationary nursery. The infant receiving schools of Satania are situated on the Finaliter world, the first of the Gerasim transition culture spheres. These infant receiving schools are enterprises devoted to the nurture and training of the children of time, including those who have died on the evolutionary worlds of space before the acquirement of individual status on the universe records. In the event of the survival of either or both of such a child's parents, the guardian of destiny deputizes her associated cherubim as the custodian of the child's potential identity, charging this cherubim with the responsibility of delivering this undeveloped soul into the hands of the mansion mortal teachers in the probationary nurseries of the Marantia worlds.
Okay, bunch of foundational things here to start with. Okay, so remember, they were gently nudging us into this back there in paper 45, I said, right? Keep forgetting which paper it is. Paper 45, isn't it? Yeah, paper 45, section 6. You know, it's like, well, you know, what children are in the probationary nursery? And the first issue is, well, how young? And remember back there, they said, such as those offspring who perished on the evolutionary worlds before acquiring spiritual status as individuals. Okay, so in other words, before roughly age 6. Right, when you're encircled in the Holy Spirit, and personality identifies, so that you have spiritual status as an individual. But obviously, you had individual status before you had spiritual status. I told you back then that they would, when we got up here, they would nudge it again. So here's, including those who have died on the evolutionary worlds of space before the acquirement of individual status on the universe records. Remember, those universe records are kept by the archangels, like we read, you know, back in that section on the archangels. And when do they put you on those records? At physical birth, at material birth. Because, you know, until you literally are an independent physical energy system from your mother, there's no potential for a different personality to eventually identify with that. Right? So that marks the beginning of individual status on the universe records, when you're literally physically independent, cut the umbilical cord. It's not one physical energy system anymore, it's two. And then the adjutants continue to engage. At roughly age 6, the 7th engages. You're encircled in the Holy Spirit. Personality identifies. The archangels make note of the initial unique qualities of that influence from eternity, that personality pattern. Right. But, you know, either way, the exact point is irrelevant. The key word is before. Right? It doesn't matter when they put the mark down. The word is always before. Right? You have just as much value as a single-celled animal at conception, at material conception, as you do trillions of years later as a finaliter, right? You don't have value because of what you are. You have value because of what you can be. A single-celled human animal, even though it has only the first adjutant, it's a long ways from personality identifying, all these factual things. But in truth, it's an eternal lighter. It's a being of eternity. A single-celled chicken isn't. Right? And so, you know, they're just reminding you there. It doesn't matter, you know, when subsequent to material conception, you know, this material death occurred. Child is resurrected in the probationary nursery. They're the salvaged children of the father. Because if I conceive a child, it's not really my child. It's God's child, right? You know, God has the say of it, that child's relationship to eternity, not me. So, again, so even if it died before birth. Right? And the other place, you know, we'll get to in a while, is about the probationary nursery is, what is that, paper 49, isn't it? Yeah, paper 49, section 6, there's some stuff about it, you know, and there they talk about a child acquires physical entity at mortal birth. Like I was saying, I mean, that's when it's an independent physical system. It's not a being, you notice they said entity, right? The personality hasn't identified yet. You know, you're pre-personal, you're pre-human, technically, you know, but in truth you're human, even though in fact you aren't yet. Okay, so again, all of the things that happen, you know, are relative to the truth of what you are, not the fact of what you are. God loves you absolutely not because of the fact of what you are, because of the truth of what you are. And truths are truths of eternity. Facts are facts of time. The being that lives in eternity can only love you in relationship to eternity. Can't love you factually. Can only love you truthfully. Can only love you in the sense that you have any relationship to eternity. Right? Your molecules of time is not what he loves. All the children are resurrected. And remember when they say the survival of either or both of such child's parents, remember in that previous thing, they explained that we're talking about the biologic parents, the natural parents, because, you know, they're the parents that you are literally mind energy still connected to as a child until about age 16. And so this whole bit about when they talk about the potential identity, remember when a personality engages a self, that makes it an identity. We're not talking about actual identity, you know, if you died at, you know, age 1 or something, right? I mean, your personality hasn't identified yet. So it's just a potential identity. In the most fundamental sense, the cherubim take your genetic specification. Right? They have an exact genetic specification. You know, even if it's, you know, it's all there when it's a single-celled conception, right? I mean, you have this precise genetic, you know, information, DNA information, and all the other issues. They know your potential identity. And even though they're going to build a body, a material body for that child that isn't exactly the same, it's the same in the way it needs to be so that the same personality identifies or will identify that would have identified. And you notice that they throw in this undeveloped soul, they throw in that expression just so you're reminded. It's like, well, you know, what if this child already has gotten their adjuster and has a soul? You know, let's say they're 8. Okay. You know, the seraphim doesn't actually handle that soul. The cherubim does. Okay. So for the children on the probationary nursery, you know, those lower angels, the cherubim rather than the seraphim, are the caretakers. If there's actually a Morantia object, you know, that has to be transported to the first mansion world. So besides building material body, there might be a little embryonic soul that gets reintegrated with it too, you know, and the adjuster will re-identify. Okay, so that's, so that the cherubim handle that that issue. These children that are going to be, these individuals that are going to have material bodies, because the cherubim are lower beings. The seraphim handle Morantia bodies on the first mansion world.
So however they do it, they don't really tell us.
Mm-hmm.
But the, irregardless of, let's say it's pre-birth, they will build a, the body they build will probably be a baby.
We'll get to that in a minute.
Oh,
let's just keep going here.
Okay.
Yep.
It is the same deserted cherubim who, as mansion world teachers, under the supervision of the Melchizedeks, maintain such extensive educational facilities for the training of the probationary wards of the Finaliters. These wards of the Finaliters, these infants of ascending mortals, are always personalized as of their exact physical status at the time of death, except for reproductive potential. This awakening occurs at the exact time of the parental arrival on the first mansion world. And then are these children given every opportunity, as they are, to choose the heavenly way, just as they would have made such a choice on the worlds where death so untimely terminated their careers.
Okay, see, so here's your question, right here, the next paragraph. Okay, so now they say the exact physical status, well, you know, we know, except for reproductive potential. Okay, so, I mean, exact is in quotes, okay. The exact part is, the potential identity part is exact. But there's other stuff that's secondary and it can be modified. It won't change what personality is going to identify with that energy system, okay, including reproductive things. Right? So they're not reproducing material bodies. And this whole question of like, well, what if it died at 2 months gestation in the womb? Do they resurrect it at that stage? Okay, well, remember what, they reminded you above. I mean, is the physical mother there on the probationary nursery? No. Mother's on the first mansion world, probably. The child is already technically, materially separated. You know, that individual status on the universe records is at birth. So most likely, if you just reflect on that, they would build it, this is a separate individual on the probationary nursery. It's not part of a mother's body. It's a separate individual, right? So most likely, every child that died before birth would have a body built, a birth age body built for it, right? So that it has individual status on the universe records, right? That just seems to be the logical thing. Especially since, you're not going to be differentiating the sexes in the womb and all that stuff. They're not sexed like that. So, why go through the motions of having some sort of an artificial incubator thing and whatnot? Why, they're building a body. Why not just build it at the individual status on the universe records and go from there? So that's my take on that. I would think that was the logical way they do it. All right.
On the nursery world, probationary creatures are grouped according to whether or not they have adjusters. For the adjusters come to indwell these material children just as on the worlds of time. Children of pre-adjuster ages are cared for in families of five, ranging in ages from 1 year and under up to approximately 5 years, or that age when the adjuster arrives.
Okay, so two things there. Notice how this ties back to the whole raising children thing. It's like, well, let's look if it would be great if they gave us an example of sort of a minimum number of children on high that they thought was a kind of a full-fledged social system. Yeah, five. More than three. All right? So you notice that. That also, it's like, well, I bet some of those people on that commission that only had three, they probably have a little bit of parenting to do yet. Don't know for sure, but it is interesting to note that they're raised in families of five. And, it's ranging in years from 1 year and under. And so, and maybe probably starting from birth age. And remember, so it says approximately 5 years here. So in other words, now, remember how I tell you, in this generation, we get, on average, kids are getting adjusters about 5 years, 10 months, and I always say, roughly age six. They're 5 years old, though. Right? So see, that's what they're saying here. So apparently we've reached pretty much the kind of the norm. Of what actually happens on the probationary nursery is also happening here, that they're basically five on average when they're getting an adjuster. Now, why do all these kids get an adjuster at roughly age six, even if they came from a world that hasn't had the bestowal of the Spirit of Truth yet and universal thought adjusters? It's because at least one of their biologic parents is on the mansion worlds, right? They're still connected mindily, and we've talked about that. If your parents have an adjuster, you get an adjuster at roughly age six, even prior to Pentecost. Yeah, but now post-Pentecost, if you actually had parents, which you can't now, who don't have an adjuster, you would get an adjuster. But, so just remember, that's the physics that's going on. Because they're still mindily connected, the adjuster in the parent's mind energy system and the overlap of the child's mind energy system with that sort of prepares the way. It allows there to be an adjuster in that child's energy system. Even though you don't have the Spirit of Truth engaging that child and bridging the gap between seventh circler and third circler. Okay, so they all get adjusters at roughly age six. And they're raised in families of five.
All children on the evolving worlds who have who have thought adjusters, but who before death had not made a choice concerning the paradise career, are also repersonalized on the finality world of the system, where they likewise grow up in families of the material sons and their associates, as do those little ones who arrive without adjusters, but who will subsequently receive the mystery monitors after attaining the requisite age of moral choice.
Right, when you're encircled in the Holy Spirit, roughly age six, you have all three cosmic intuitions, and kind of specifically the second cosmic intuition, the moral discrimination. And you notice, they don't have to, remember when they say making your first moral choice, it doesn't have to be a conscious thing. It can be an unconscious choice, that unconscious choice of the personality identifying. See how they say it here, requiring the requisite age of moral choice. They don't even speak of actually the making of the choice, but just that age. And so it happens automatically, what that means. And notice here they don't always do this, but they actually are, they back here, they said always personalized of their exact physical status. You're going, well, wait a minute, what if they're like, 1 year old, personality hasn't identified? Well, again, in truth, right? personalized. But you notice how they said it a little bit more factually here, repersonalized. Because, of course, if the child died in the jester, personality had identified. Right, and so more factually, it's repersonalized.
Okay. I'm confused by what they say next about the families of material sons.
Right, so you've got material sons and daughters that are serving in the probationary nursery, you know, being the parents for the families. And there's unrevealed beings too involved that they don't specify there. See, and their associates, and we don't know all what's going on. But again, you need actual fathers and mothers, right? And the only beings that are literally father-like and mother-like are material sons and daughters. Right? Seraphim or cherubim or, you know, who knows, you know, whatever are not going to do. Right? You've got material children. You need material parents, mothers and fathers. Right? So they're serving there. So, you know, you think about...
Change the diapers.
Well, no, the spermagia could change the diapers. Because there's a lot of diapers to change, okay? So the spermagia are legion and can change diapers.
Well, it's not essential parental experience to change a diaper.
Oh, you think you're going to weasel out of that, don't you? Guys are always looking for an out on that one.
I'm forever seared by that.
All right. But anyway, so obviously it's going to take a lot of material sons and daughters, for 50 Earth size, area of a probationary nursery. You know, just think about how many material sons and daughters there has to be just to handle the probationary nursery. Right? They do a lot more than just going as Adam and Eve's to worlds. Right? Okay.
The adjuster indwelt children and youths on the finaliter world are also reared in families of five, ranging in ages from 6 to 14. Approximately, these families consist of children whose ages are 6, 8, 10, 12, and 14. Any time after 16, if final choice has been made, they translate to the first mansion world and begin their paradise ascent. Some make a choice before this age and go on to the ascension spheres, but very few children under 16 years of age, as reckoned by Urantia standards, will be found on the mansion worlds.
Okay, so two things. You know, there you have that definitive thing that I always say, you know, roughly age 16, you know, that's the mindal conception age. You know, that's when the child is a separate mindal self. The mindal cells aren't overlapping still, so they aren't literally, you know, linked together, bound to the biologic parent. You know, and we basically recognize how at roughly age 16 a child begins to function in a less dependent way, you know, in a less sort of glued to their parents sort of a way. We all know that issues can start, right? Before that, even if it's unwitting in the child, there's going to be a tendency for them to, it's like, well, they have this idea. But there's always a little bit, I wonder what mom and dad think about that, right? And that's because they're still literally mindily overlapping. But once they get a separate, domain in the mind energy system, then that instinct isn't there anymore. They just do it rather than wondering, well, I wonder what mom and dad would think about this. Okay, that's just a literal mindal overlap issue.
Many times I've read this, I always thought for some reason that the minds that these pre-adolescents were still attached to was the mother's mind.
No, both parents.
Mother and father.
Yep. Right. I mean, because, the child is a super additive consequence, right? So their mindal space is initially overlapping. You know, just like we talk about identical twins start out, they're literally using the exact same mindal energy space. So that's why they can, have the same thoughts at the same time, because they really don't have separate minds initially.
Some of the preconceived ideas that are not.
Right. But until personality finally separates, and that's what's doing it here, right? But by roughly age 16, that personality influence, even if it's very subtle and unconscious, you know, is slowly separating. And identical twins may have the same biology, but they have absolutely unique personalities, right? And that influence finally separates them. And at the same time, the genetic closeness to the parents, you know, they separate from the parents too. But again, remember, it's because mind is attuned to the genetics. The mind you start with, and the mind that you're using is attuned to the genetics. Your genetics is similar to your parents, so your mind attunement is similar to your parents. Right?
That's probably the reason why, precisely at 17, they put me in the Army.
Right, because if the parents aren't biologically, mindily providing some form, some structure, something needs to, some external thing often needs to step in and constrain that child. Yeah. Yep. See, you can just think about how this is just, it's a literal thing. Now, notice the other thing they're telling you about, that they have children that are spaced about 2 years apart. Okay? In these, so that must provide the most effective interaction between the children, if they have some separation like that, if they aren't too close in age. You want that, you want greater differential, you know, because the greatest super additive potential is in more differential. So they're trying to maximize the actualization of the child's potentials by not having, you know, five kids that are, you know, all, you know, within 1 year apart, you know. So they spread them out to do that one-room schoolhouse thing of having all the kids, you know, of different ages together to help catalyze the older ones, catalyze the younger ones, mm-hmm. Right? Okay, so you can see the physics of what they're doing here. Any time after 16, you know, roughly, if they've definitively made this choice that we're going to talk about in a minute here, then they're going to die on the probationary nursery and be resurrected with a Marantia body on the first mansion world. You know, they'll just be shut off. Their soul will be transported to the first mansion world. The Marantia body is built for them. The Marantia brain, that soul, is put into that Marantia body, and off they go again. Yeah, so.
But they won't have parental experience.
Right, So they're all going to need to do some parental experience, right?
I got to think about that.
Yeah, good modeling. You can be assured of that.
Nope.
The guardian seraphim attend these youths in the probationary nursery on the Fenelter world just as they spiritually minister to mortals on the evolutionary planets. While the faithful Spernagia minister to their physical necessities. And so do these children grow up on the transition world until such time as they make their final choice.
Okay, and just that up there in paper 49, you know, they give you some more about the seraphic ministry. I'll just read you this paragraph real quick. It says, in due course, thought adjusters come to indwell these little ones. While the seraphic ministry to both groups, you know, on either side of the adjusters arriving, like we were talking about, of the probationary dependent orders of survival is in general similar to that of the more advanced parent, or is equivalent to that of the parent in the case only one survives. Those attaining the third circle, regardless of the status of their parents, are accorded personal guardians. Now, so that's in general the way it works, right? Prior to age 16, the child is benefiting from the seraphic ministry of the more advanced parent. I mean, that's true here, just as it is on the probationary nursery. But the fact that they mention that you could have a child, you know, getting to the third circle on the probationary nursery, wow. That's reminding you of something. Remember, there's no hindrances here. There's no genetic issues, you know, severely limiting genetic issues. They haven't put that, you know, those shackles on this child that they've built. You know, it's basically a, you know, a material son and daughter like biologic integrity, you know, the true genetic expression of that DNA. They have all this incredible influence. They're still literally connected to their parents. Their parents have a Marantia mind, you know, and an adjuster. I mean, that Marantia mind is very intimately related to that adjuster. That child is benefiting from that. You know, this is an accelerated phenomenon. They can get to a very, you know, advanced stage of choosing ability in a very short span of time.
Okay. What exactly do they mean by final choice?
Here? Well, that's next. Yeah. It's always the next paragraph that we're going to talk about that. Yep. So let's, yeah, that's the one loose end we have here. Let's see what they say next.
That's a pretty important clue.
Yep.
About mind-old symmetry of biologics and genetics.
Yeah.
Is how a child's mind can advance to a third circle status from a remote parent's right. evolution.
Right. If you take out all of the things that aren't necessarily you know, holding you back, if you liberate the child from that, you know, the boat anchors, they can get to the point of very definitive choice in a very short span of time. Right. So see what they say next.
When material life has run its course, if no choice has been made for the ascendant life, or if these children of time definitely decide against the Havona adventure, death automatically terminates their probationary careers. There is no adjudication of such cases. There is no resurrection from such a second death. They simply become as though they had not been.
Okay, so now this whole bit about the final choice. This is where you see a differential between a normal child on a nativity world and on the probationary nursery. You know, the key statement there is no adjudication of such cases. Okay, that means that there's no gray. There's no extenuating circumstances that have to be adjudicated or anything. Nothing is in the way. The child can get, without any hindrance, into a very definitive, clear recognition of the cosmos by like, you know, 16, 17, 18 or whatever.
Right.
Okay? And so you've got a little bit different physics here. Notice that it says, when material life has run its course, it's like, well, okay, how long is this life? Well, I mean, the age of choice, you know, for material sons and daughters, where there isn't any hindrance, is 20. Right. So they probably, the life carriers don't have to design bodies that last more than, say, 21 or something. Right? Probably all along these children have to live in a probationary nursery to be able to definitively get to the point where they can choose. It's so definitive that if no choice has been made for the ascended life, right? So, I mean, you don't even, it doesn't have to be a positive or a negative choice. It could be no choice. To choose to not choose is to choose. Right? You know, because there's nothing to be adjudicated. There's no issue. I mean, they see exactly what the potential is. And they just shrug their shoulders. Not interested.
Right.
Okay? Well, what is it, you know? So, in other words, that's reminding you. Remember, You now have definitive evidence that the purposing of that personality is not independent from God the Supreme. That purposing of that personality, I mean, it's so literally not independent of God the Supreme that it really is just part of the evolution of God the Supreme, not of us, of an independent individual in eternity. That there's just a shoulder shrug. Okay, so see, it's a little bit, you know, a child on a nativity world, there's, you know, this is not in play. I mean, indifference is not, you know,
yeah.
a death sentence. Okay,
yeah. This is
different on the probationary nursery. See, and you also have, if these children at times definitively decide against the Havona adventure, you know, I mean, the fact that no choice, you know, I mean, it doesn't, that doesn't have to imply iniquity either. But it could be. They could be literally going to iniquity, too. But you notice it's everywhere from no choice all the way to iniquity. Just, you know, anything that's not a definitive positive choice, okay, means that that child just dies. You know, and the body obviously decays itself, but there's a Marantia soul, right? That has to be unraveled by the divine executioner. Right? But remember that the qualities of that individual are reflected into the Supreme. You know, technically the Almighty part of the Supreme. And that personality, that purposing, goes to the Supreme as well. Right? So, like I said, I mean, you're seeing the fact playing out that those individuals weren't separate, you know, or independent individuals in eternity. That's just part of the evolution of God the Supreme.
I'm thinking, Chris, about how parents on this level of existence feel they have failed if they have a child that commits suicide. Do you suppose the material sons and daughters feel that same way when these children choose not to?
Well, that's what I was just about to mention. I mean, material suicide is, you know, is irrelevant, of course. It doesn't matter how you material die. All mortal souls are mortal. They die. The question is, you know, this is cosmic suicide.
I was just getting to.
I was wanting you to reflect on that. I mean, you know, they talked about the incredible embrace scene. Those parents on the Imagine World have to be objective enough to deal with the fact that their child just shrugged its shoulders at eternity. Okay? So, you know, we've got to remember there's more going on here than it's not all about us. There's the evolution of the Supreme, too.
Yeah, well, I guess what had confused me, this final choice idea, because I thought, well, so they go on, don't they still have to make a definitive choice for eternity to get an adjust? No, I say it's a question of survival or not survival. They've chosen to survive, so they have made a definitive choice. Mm-hmm. For us mortals who are resurrected, there's a sifting and settling that has to take place before we get to this point.
Right. I mean, you know, it takes us a long time to get to this level of clarity that these children get to in very short order on the probationary nursery.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
That's yeah.
A major point.
Now, that's the truth of it. You know, you get to this point too eventually, right? I mean, but there's adjudication because there's extenuating circumstances and whatnot involved with you, right? But you know, it's very definitive with them. You know, so just it's a point where the truth of what's ahead of you is made very definitive fact on the probationary nursery. You know. In very short order, they come to that binary decision point. You know, and that purposing, that personality says no. You know, and what that is really saying in truth is, I'm not a separate individual. I'm not independent of God the Supreme. I'm part of the evolution of God the Supreme. You know, and that fact is immediately apparent when, you know, what becomes of that personality, that purposing, it becomes part of God the Almighty and hence part of God the Supreme.
Parental pun.
Yeah. All right, so this, reflecting on the probationary nursery is really, there's a bunch of things that you can only figure out from this section about the probationary nursery, about the nature of you. Okay, let's read the last one here.
But if they choose the paradise path of perfection, they are immediately made ready for translation to the first mansion world, where many of them arrive in time to join their parents in the Havona ascent. After passing through Havona and attaining the deities, the salvaged souls of mortal origin constitute the permanent ascendant citizenship of paradise. These children, who have been deprived of the valuable and essential evolutionary experience on the worlds of mortal nativity are not mustered into the core of the finality.
Right, so we often mention that. Right, you know, the definition of a finaliter is someone who's experienced from the very bottom all the way to the very top. Just a technical definition. If you haven't experienced from the very bottom all the way to the top, you can't be a finaliter. So darn, you're going to have to stay on the Isle of Paradise in the immediate presence of the three infinite persons forever. Drat. If you're inducted into the core of finality, you may have to go down to a lowly local system and serve there for trillions of years, you know, down in the trenches. So everything has its place. There has to be permanent citizens of paradise. This is one way that permanent citizens of paradise come into existence. You know, if children didn't die before age 16, you could never have these permanent citizens of the Isle of Paradise. It's the only way they can be brought into existence. Right? So when all is said and done, there are no coincidences. Right? Right? Everything comes into existence in its proper way. Everyone has their part of the picture that they play. Okay, well, obviously you can reflect for endless hours on the probationary nursery section, and you ought to do that. Go back and study it more yourself and reflect on each of these. You know, they have these little vignette paragraphs, as you can see. You know, each one you're supposed to spend some time and get to understand this individually, personally. What's going on here? Get a sense of the physics. Get a sense of the truth. You'll understand yourself better by seeing how when all of the fogginess and confusion is cleared away, and you have this very definitive evolution, maturation of a child, you know, you kind of see it all in vignette there, the truth of you, and understand how the universe works a little bit better.
But we are children. We are definitely children.
Okay. So next time we'll get into the actual mansion worlds, and there's all kinds of fun stuff there. So if you have any questions about the probationary nursery stuff that comes up, you know, make a note and we can talk about them. But it's a big thing to come to terms with in many ways. All right, let's take a moment here, everyone.